This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 241 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, happy spring. We finally look like we've made it out of winter, finally.
Yes, and the best part of that, well, there's a lot of good parts of that, but one of them is it starts drone flying season for this year, at least for those of us who live in the colder northern climes. So that's good news.
Are you actually going to, you and Drone Mom are going to fly your drones this summer?
We'll see how long it takes us to crash them.
Ah, okay. But we got a lot of good news this week. An announcement from UL, DJI, and what they do with the privacy and geolocking. An announcement from our previous sponsor, UAV Propulsion Tech, mosquitoes, lithium air, and a taxi startup designed by McLaren, and really large fish. So let's get started. Well, two episodes ago, we had the team from UL and that they were going to have the first certified UAV. So this comes from PRNewswire.com. First unmanned aircraft systems and automated guided vehicle certified by UL. This is pretty cool, Max. What do you think?
Yeah, it is. As we talked about in that previous episode, UL was developing or had developed this certification referred to as UL 3030. An electrical system safety certification for unmanned aircraft, for small drones. And as we talked with them, they were getting close to certifying the first drone under UL 3030. And what is it? Well, it's an Intel drone, the Falcon 8 Plus. It becomes the first drone certified under UL 3030.
Anil Nanduri, Vice President and General Manager of Intel's drone group, says, quote, "The Intel Falcon 8 Plus drone is designed for advanced flight performance with redundancy built in for safety and reliability. Our successful UL listing of the Intel Falcon 8 Plus drone to UL's 3030 safety standard demonstrates Intel's commitment to safe operations needed for commercial applications such as inspection, surveying, and mapping." And of course, this is a pro-grade octocopter?
In kind of a little bit different configuration than we see in others.
It's hard to tell. We'll have the schematic in the thing. But basically, we've got a parallel set of rotors for each in a line with a center console for the electronics.
It's a highly stable and very interesting drone. We also have a video from Intel that shows the Falcon 8 Plus. And yeah, you can kind of imagine, if you would, sort of two parallel skids, except they're not exactly parallel. The rear of each is closer together than the front, so they're sort of at an angle. And then each has the four rotors. And said very stable. It's got a carbon fiber chassis. This is something that you'd put your Sony high-end mirrorless camera on. It's just a commercial grade kind of a device. And the video, interestingly enough, demonstrates how capable this is of performing even after some failures. They actually cut off part of one of the rotor blades and then fly the Falcon 8 Plus with that damage, and it does just fine. So, congratulations to UL for their first certification under UL3030, and congratulations to Intel for being the first drone certified under that. I think we'll see a lot more of these coming in the future, and I think that's good for industry.
I figured it out, Max. I know what it looks like.
Yeah?
A water strider. You know the bugs that sort of walk along the water?
Yes.
It's a water strider.
Okay.
So if you don't know what a water strider is, just go look at bugs and water walk on. So the next one is from Drone DJI releases findings of Kivu report to stem concerns that China might use DJI's drones to spy on the U.S. Now, this time last year, we were talking about the Pentagon was freezing the use of Phantoms on military property because they were afraid that the data was getting back to China, mainland China. So this is DJI trying to spell those worries. They had a study done showing what they do with the data.
That's right. They asked McDermott, Will, and Emery, or MWE, to undertake an independent investigation. And then MWE hired this Kivu consulting company to conduct the investigation. And we have really two articles from Drone DJ. The first one describes the results of the study just based on some summary information they had received. And then a subsequent article, then we'll have links to both these in the show notes, goes into much greater depth after Drone DJ received the full report. But basically, what does the report say? The report says that, quote, users have control over the types of data DJI drones collect, store, and transmit. So the key here, I think, is that users have control. In other words, between the hardware, the software, there is a lot of data collection going on, and there is the opportunity for a lot of it to be transmitted. But the user has control. Now, the methodology, Kivu bought some different models of DJI drones. They went out and bought them. They got and installed the Go4 apps. They did that for both Apple and Android devices. And DJI gave Kivu access to managers and engineers from DJI, both in the U.S. and, interestingly, in China. And they also gave Kivu access to some of the proprietary DJI code. And what they found is that, well, the drones can upload media files to servers. They can record flight logs on the drone and in the apps and upload that data to servers, but only if the user chooses to do so. So it's kind of an interesting result, David. They're finding that it is possible, but you as the operator of the drone and of the software can control whether or not that data transmission actually takes place.
It's a little bit like when your computer crashes. I know on my Apple, if something goes haywire, it says, would you like to send this log to Apple? Yes or no. So you have to give permission for it to send that information. Otherwise, it's just going to restart the computer. By default, DJI drones transmit some information when the device is turned on. This can be prevented by disconnecting from the internet, deactivation of the app, or by using local data mode on Android devices. PII, which is personal identifiable information, is acquired from someone entering in their warranty card at the purchase of the product, which we've all done. It used to be you got a little card to activate the warranty and you would ship it off. So in this case, the applications can collect and transmit certain information, but the bottom line is the person operating it has the ability to turn all of that off or choose to have it turned on.
Now, again, after Drone DJ obtained the full report from DJI, there's a lot more specific information as to which servers are being used when the user allows the data to be stored. Interestingly, Drone DJ promised DJI that they would not publish the actual report, so we don't have a link to that. But some examples of when the data collection is turned on. So, for example, if a user in the United States anyway captures photos and videos with their drone and uploads the media files to DJI's SkyPixel server, well, that information, it's sent through an encrypted tunnel, interestingly enough, to the Alibaba cloud servers that are in San Jose, California. The report mentions that, quote, Kivu did not identify any instance of photos, video, or audio being sent to DJI servers without direct user action and authorization. Another example is, the no-fly zones. What happens there is obviously the software needs to know something about where you are and then access the no-fly zone database to turn on geofencing and that sort of thing. According to this, it says that your generalized location within a 10-kilometer radius of the actual drone location is then referenced against the database. So, I mean, that's an example, I think, David, of something that, you know, you could say, well, it knows where I am and it's transmitting that data. But if you're going to effectively operate a geofencing system, it's got to know those things, right?
Absolutely. And the follow-on to this is the GPS locations along a flight path. Locations and thumbnails of photos taken, as well as video recordings, timestamps, speed, direction. All of that's recorded by the drone, and the users have the option to upload their logs to DJI servers for backup purposes, or submit them for DJI review in the event of a crash or a malfunction. Again, this is the okay, but you still have to opt to use it. The drones don't automatically upload or transmit the flight logs, which the implication was that this data was automatically being transmitted to DJI, and it's not. The information is sent to Amazon Web Services, located in Ashburn, Virginia. So, again, surprisingly, the U.S. data isn't leaving the U.S. It's stored on servers in the United States.
Yes, and there's also some data that's called user experience data, and that includes things like flight distance, duration, average number of photos taken during each flight. And by default, in this case, by default, that information, this user experience data, is automatically transmitted to DJI servers. But the report notes that that can be disabled by the user in the application. And then there's also some diagnostic information that the Go4 app collects, information that says related to the device the Go4 application is installed on, the last IP address the mobile device was connected to, along with something that's called the International Mobile Equipment Identity of the mobile device, camera type, aircraft type, controller type, longitude and latitude, firmware information, so forth, error messages. Now, that diagnostic information is sent to two Tencent cloud computing servers in China, in Shenzhen and in Beijing. Again, it's kind of a mixed bag. I think in some ways, you know, both sides, if you will, are correct that in the first place, just like with any computer, any personal electronic device, there is a lot of data that is captured. In the case of DJI drones, much of that data could end up in servers in other places. But again, to a large extent, you have control over that. It's kind of like being the informed consumer. If you just go into Facebook, for example, and just don't even bother looking at the privacy settings and spending some time configuring Facebook so that your information is protected in the way you want, then it's out there and free to be used. So same is true with something like a drone from DJI, in that you need to be an informed consumer and make the selections that protect your privacy in the way that you want it protected. So that's kind of my big conclusion from this. Not that DJI is evil or anything, or is doing something surreptitious necessarily, but that you just need to be an informed consumer in order to protect your information.
Agreed. I mean, and that all comes with knowing your equipment and asking and doing some research. I mean, privacy is always your responsibility as the owner of it. There's a lot of I spend lots of time dealing with privacy in my day job, but you need to keep that in mind, that your privacy is your privacy, and sometimes maybe you need to read that 10-page document that you're just scrolling down and clicking the bottom to make sure you understand what they are doing with your data.
Right. Well, David, fuel cells, David, hydrogen fuel cells.
Well, take it away, Mr. Max Fuel Cell Flight.
So we've seen a press release from UAV Propulsion Tech, as well as an article in unmannedaerial.com. UAV Propulsion Tech bringing HES hydrogen solutions to U.S. drone market. And again, we have also a link to the press release from UAV Propulsion Tech. Now, in the past, we've talked about Singapore's HES energy systems and the very small, very lightweight hydrogen fuel systems for UAVs. Well, the announcement here is that UAV Propulsion Tech has been appointed to be their authorized U.S. representative for these lightweight hydrogen fuel cells systems. So that's very exciting. Now, that doesn't mean that you as a consumer can rush out and purchase one of these systems. Of course, UAV Propulsion Tech is a company that markets UAV technology in the United States, but in a case like this, to OEMs, to drone makers that are interested in including hydrogen fuel cells as the propulsion or as the power system for their drone. So very exciting. I think that's great for UAV Propulsion Tech. It's great for HES Energy Systems in terms of getting their hardware out into the market. So very exciting.
And you just love fuel cells.
You got to love fuel cells.
Well, I don't like the next subject, but I thought this was absolutely fascinating. And when someone asked me what I was recording tonight, I said, we're going to be talking about mosquitoes. And they went, oh, is that a new type of drone? And I'm like, no, actually, we're going to be talking about mosquitoes. Zika, which is a deadly virus carried by mosquitoes. Drones are being used through a breakthrough process in Brazil. This was from Reuters.com, so it doesn't get any more intense than this. Breakthrough in mosquitoes packed drones to combat Zika in Brazil. The Zika virus will be combated in Brazil by using drones. The mosquitoes they're going to carry, they're going to fight with, are they're going to release millions of sterile laboratory-bred male mosquitoes. Now, okay, what's that got to do with drones? Well, the sterile mosquitoes populate with females, egg-bearing females, and cause the population to go down. And how do you spread lots and lots of mosquitoes, male mosquitoes, over a large area? You do it with a UAS. And it's been successful, and now other countries are looking at using this kind of population that use the sterile male mosquitoes to kill the females and to reduce the mosquito population, and therefore reducing the potential of someone getting bit by a mosquito with Zika, which causes horrific birth defects if someone's pregnant. But makes other people very sick. So, and of course, there's other mosquito-borne diseases. So if you have standing water in your area, in your house, make sure you change it regularly. You don't want to breed mosquitoes. So there's the UAV Digest warning, because if you've never had a spray truck go down the road, just keep away from standing water, because there's nothing worse than a spray truck in South Jersey spraying for mosquitoes.
Yeah, this is certainly a very interesting and a significant application for drones. And yeah, the flavor I get from it, David, is that while they had field tested this concept before it, with success, the issue was, yeah, how do you get millions of these things out there so that they can effectively reduce the population, and drones to the rescue. So another great social application.
So send in the bees, I mean the drones. Well, I snuck this next story in because I don't know if everybody knows this, Max, but besides engines and photography, you have a secret love, don't you?
Sure. Formula One racing. Been into that since about 1973, I think, at Watkins Glen. And loved to watch the racing then, been following it ever since. And so here we have another story, sort of the intersection of Formula One and unmanned aircraft, I guess. And this is concerning this taxi startup, Lilium. And what are they doing here, David?
Well, they're hiring designer Frank Stevenson, who works for the McLaren company, or formerly worked for the McLaren company, designing Formula One cars. So this startup is going for, if it looks good, it flies good, as an air taxi, which was kind of neat, because we sort of grazed the whole Formula One when we've been talking about batteries, and that I believe, Max, you're the expert on this, that they're now running on electric Formula One?
It's a hybrid, actually. So much of the propulsion from fuel, gasoline, if you will, as in the past, but they use the energy, excess energy that is captured to charge batteries, which is then used to boost the power. Although there is another series, Formula E, which uses race cars that are only battery powered. So this is great stuff. We like to see this because, it improves the breed. This is a application that forces technology development and pushes the industry along, pushes the technology along. And kind of same thing here. Guys like Frank Stevenson, who have had careers in terms of designing some really special vehicles, bring their knowledge to bear in terms of designing an air taxi, unmanned air taxi. And I think only good things will happen. Bring together some fantastic minds from different worlds and create some new things. And I guess that's what's happening here with Lilium Air Taxi.
And let's face it, racing in all aspects has always been the breeding ground for technology.
Yes.
And that goes for race cars. The reason why the Indianapolis 500 exists was because it was really just a giant test track. The Supermarine Spitfire grew out of a air racer. And we learn a lot from drone racing, and I'm sure that technology as well. So it is kind of neat, and I'm sure that Stevenson will be able to apply things like epoxies and dealing with composites and all of the things that go into making Formula One cars really lightweight and basically indestructible, or destructible. That's where they save people dramatically. So this was a cool story, and I'm glad we got to talk about fuel cells in Formula One for Max Flight.
You know where this probably leads us, David?
Where?
Air taxi racing.
Ooh.
It's coming.
Yeah, there we go.
It's got to be coming, right? The Air Taxi Racing League.
You heard it here first. The air taxi racing league. Okay, I'll volunteer to be one of the passengers.
There you go.
Well, we got a video of the week, and I was sort of surprised. I caught this on my Weather Channel app. But this was from a stunning manta ray sighting off the Florida coast. Drone spotted this manta ray, and it looks like it might be a new species, and it's huge. I like manta rays. From the moment I took my first cruise and I was watching them fly out of the water, they are kind of nature's prettiest amphibians. And rays are really cool, but this is a giant manta ray.
It is big. I'm kind of scared of those things, you know, David.
Rays?
Yeah.
Really?
I think they're scary. Oh, I stay out of the ocean. You know, there's creepy stuff in the ocean, including rays.
There's creepy stuff on land, too.
All right. Well, hey, we should probably mention one of our newer partners in terms of unmanned aviation conferences. And this is the third annual UAV Technology Conference coming up in Prague, September 26th through 27th, 2018. They're going to be looking at the rapid proliferation of technology. They're going to be looking at how national armed forces as well as law enforcement agencies are developing their unmanned airborne capabilities. They're also planning to have many briefings on sort of this emerging necessity of countering UAVs and the technologies that are available for that. And of course, this will also be an opportunity to join in with a global community of leaders and experts that are going to impact the growth in these technology areas. So you can learn more about this conference at uav-technology.org/UAV Digest, or if you want to do it a little more simply, just go over to our website, the uavdigest.com, and look for the banner, the conference banner over on the right hand side, click that and learn more about the UAV Technology Conference.
So I guess with that, Max, we should probably wrap this up. What do you think?
Absolutely. We want to thank you all for listening to episode 241 of the UAV Digest. Find more information about us as well as the show notes at the uavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, you'll find them at the uavdigest.com/241.
And of course, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. On our Slack team, you can send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com and join our Slack listener team, where our power users are there and talking about stuff that even Max and I don't even understand. you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. And you can send us an email either to Max or me. That would be max@theuavdigest.com or david@theuavdigest.com. Leave us some feedback on Google Play or Stitcher or Apple Podcasts. And you can always purchase us some swag at our Cafe Press store. And of course, you see our sponsors and our conferences on our webpage. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.